Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll go ahead and get started. I appreciate you coming back again tonight. We are going to begin in the early pages of the book. I'm going to actually ask you to just turn to page one of the book, and we're going to go through, just kind of review a little bit. I would really like to get through the history, that first chapter. I'm not sure if we can, if we flip back and forth through the pictures and things. What I'm trying to do, so you kind of understand what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to overview the history that we see right here, the overall history of Jerusalem. Kind of talk about, besides one night, we just went through each of the dates or the time periods. Now we're trying to talk about some of the events that take place during those, including the silent 400 years, the days of Herod's building. Kind of just review it. And then once we finish that, we'll be able to go through the book page by page and actually come back and look at some of the things we're just kind of introducing today. Like tonight, we may bump into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, kind of look at a few pictures there, kind of talk about it, but then we're going to come back to the history and continue to move. Again, I'd like to finish this tonight, I'm not sure if that's going to happen. Also, if you are interested or thinking about going to Jerusalem in June, I think Tony has handed out, I was talking to her today a little bit about some application or paperwork. We'd like to get that kind of taken care of and get that in because there's a process, and they'll mail us some homework we need to do. Again, we've got plenty of time yet, but it'd be nice if we would. I'm kind of feeling kind of edgy about it. It's like, I'm not sure if it's coming together, you know what I'm saying? So I'm kind of a little edgy about that. Not in a derogatory sense, just in my heart. And so I just wonder if there's anybody's got that kind of stuff ready to go. Any questions before I pray and we'll get started? Any questions at all about anything? Again, I appreciate you being here. Anybody? Comments? Thank you very much for coming. Well, let's bow our heads, I'll pray, and we'll get started. Father, we come to you tonight in the name of Jesus. We do thank you for the chance to look into this. We thank you for the opportunity to hear the things that are historical, the things that confirm the scriptures and declare the glory and your plans that you've had for the past and for the history of Jerusalem. We ask that we may, again, understand these things, that would be accurate and my teaching would be clear. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I did get an email just to tell you this, kind of, I guess it's bragging, I guess, but it is kind of interesting. I got an email from someone from Jerusalem today, individual that's going through a training class to become a tour guide. Now, you just can't go over there. Like, for example, I just couldn't take you over there and give you a tour. You've got to have a license. You've got to be on staff and licensed to be able to just go around and show people stuff. Anyway, he's taking this tour class, and he says he's downloaded this book. I haven't even sent him a copy yet, but he downloaded the book and went through the Jerusalem 101 part of the Generation Word page, and he says it's the best information about the old city in Hebrew or English that they've ever seen, which is like, yeah, okay, yeah. I'll have to cut that part out of the tape now that you clap. But I just thought that was interesting because it's like, you know, I've been there. I mean, really, do not, I've been there twice, in 2007, 2010. So don't, it's like, wow, this man's like Indiana Jones. It's like, no, I've been there twice. And so it's just kind of interesting the book is getting some attention from different places. I want to say a ton, but it's actually five orders on Saturday from people from Texas, and just different addresses, but they keep saying we're going to Israel in October and we want to get a copy of this book, so we're sending it out to them. So it's kind of neat. A lot of tours are getting this book and going over there with it. And again, as you can see, if you can carry it around with you, you get to the place, you look it up, and kind of, you know, just look at the pictures. It's kind of helpful. So anyway, that's just, I guess you call it bragging, but it's kind of informative. It's interesting to know that what we're doing here is kind of having an impact. Yes, ma'am. Right. And that's the book that's online. And if you do the Jerusalem 101 and look at the pictures on that side, then they're all in color. I mean, you get a little more detail of the pictures. So, but if you're standing there looking at it, who wants a color photo? So there it is. All right. Well, hey, we are on page one. That sounds very bad for where we're at. But I just want to kind of review kind of Jerusalem, the city. And as you see right there, this should all be review. You've got the original city of David, which was settled by, you know, the Canaanites many years ago. It's on that western ridge, as you can see right here, or the eastern ridge, the city of David, or Salem, or Jabesh. The key thing being there is not just the valleys and the formation of the city, but the water source, the Gihon Springs. Outside the city is a continuation of that ridge going up called Mount Moriah. That's where the temple's going to go. There's a central valley, and then there's another mound, or the western ridge, which is Mount Zion today. And again, Zion is kind of a difficult word. You really need to study the word when it's in the text, and they say Zion. Are they talking about heaven? are they talking about that mount? The mount right there called Mount Zion was named by the Crusaders. They thought that was Mount Zion. But in a sense, sometimes even when David talks about looking up to Mount Zion, was he looking that way or was he looking at Mount Moriah again? So the word Zion, sometimes it's metaphor or it's allegorical. Sometimes it's an actual place. So you got to be kind of careful when you read in the text the word Zion. What is it talking about? Page 3, Solomon comes around about, 950, 980 after David's time. And you can see he extends the city to the north, actually tears down the northern wall of David and extends the city up and builds the Temple Mount on Mount Moriah. Now, again, there's several, we're going to look at it tonight possibly, there's several expansions. Solomon built a square Temple Mount as far as having a retaining wall, but then it's been expanded to the south by the Maccabees a little bit, and then expanded again to the south by Herod, but also by Herod to the west and to the north. Herod expanded it greatly, and that's what you see today, is Herod's expansion. We'll talk about that a little bit. Well, that's the way the city looked, and then on page 4, until around 700 AD or BC, when the northern 10 tribes of Israel were invaded by the Assyrians, and they scattered, and many of them ran down south into Judah, and you can see right there the expansion to the west towards the Hinnom Valley that Hezekiah put on the city. He also dug the tunnel called Hezekiah's Tunnel to bring water from the pool of Siloam under the city through the bedrock into the pool of, from the Gihon Springs into the pool of Siloam. Again, you can see the Temple Mount, kind of just the perspective of the city. Turn the page again to page 6, and this is where we left off last week, and I've got the map up here that we talked about. But this, now, of course, the city was destroyed by the Babylonians, 586, and everyone was taken captive. A few survivors left and lived in the farmlands and stuff. But the city itself was trashed. The walls were tore down. The gates were burnt. The temple destroyed. Many of the things, the temple articles, were taken to Babylon. Well, Nehemiah comes back in 445 BC, and he sees the city in ruins. Now, they'd tried a couple times to build some kind of wall, some kind of defense system, but they keep being invaded by the Samaritans and other raiding tribes. No one really wants them there. Nehemiah comes with king's perspective, Artaxerxes, the emperor of the Persians. He gives him permission to go and restore the city. Now, that's kind of interesting because that is the date that begins Daniel's 70 weeks when he says the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild the city. That was this right here is the beginning of that countdown, the last 490 years or 483 years until the time of Christ. And, of course, we have seven left. Now we're into eschatology. But nonetheless, you can see that we went through that in quite detail. And he marched around. One time he went out on a night journey to go out and walk around the city on a horse with a few men. And he walked a certain way and saw the disaster the walls were in. And then in a period of time, a very few days, 50-some days, they built the walls up and installed the gates, and the city was back on the map. Again, noticing right there, a couple things to the left of that map or to the west, it's pointing out the remains of Hezekiah's broad wall. And again, if you go back on to page 4, you can see that wall that went out and around the city that we talked about when the Assyrian invasion and many of the Israelites fled south. Hezekiah built that wall. Well, that was torn down by Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians, where when Nehemiah came, part of that wall still remained, and he used it as a marker, an identification. He mentions the broad wall. Well, this place right there, the little kind of the furthest place to the left, you can still see that's been excavated. You can see that remains of the broad wall from 700 AD that was there at his time. Okay, now, we're going to begin reading on page 6, right there towards the bottom, where it says, rule by the Persian Empire that Nehemiah had served under was replaced by the Greeks or the Grecian Empire in 332. I'm going to start reading right there, and we're going to be at the top of this page over here and just reading through this information. And what we're going to talk about is the time period between the Persian rule and the coming of Herod and the Romans, the Greek period. It's the Maccabean revolt is going to take place. Anyway, coming in 332, Alexander the Great came, of course, and he came in. He was brought into the city. He worshipped at the temple as a pagan or a Gentile would. Didn't get to go into the holy place, didn't desecrate the temple, but the Jews were allowed to continue to operate under Alexander the Great's rule. And again, if you studied Alexander the Great just as a young man, he just marched across the Middle East and just conquered Egypt, conquered Syria, conquered and took the Persian kingdom empire and continued out into India and finally came back and died at a very young age in Babylon, and then it was replaced by his four generals. The main generals that we want to mention here, again, just as we go by, there was there was four generals, Lysimachus and Cassander's, two generals, basically went back to the west, ruling Macedonia and Greece. But two generals that stayed there, Jerusalem, there's Dead Sea, Jordan River, Sea of Galilee, Jerusalem. Here's Egypt, and this would be Syria. It's very interesting even today. Syria is a very interesting situation right now as we watch what's going on there. But the general that came down here into Egypt was Ptolemy. And there's many Ptolemies. Cleopatra is going to come from this line. There's going to be like four or five Cleopatras. There's going to be like 10 Ptolemies. They're all called Ptolemy. And, you know, they all have different names. But Ptolemy the first, Ptolemy the second. This is going to be the Seleucid. Okay, I don't know if I spelled that right. Seleucid is going to lead to the little horn of that Daniel prophesied about, Antiochus Epiphanes, Antiochus Epiphanes. And he's going to be the one who's going to bring about the persecution. But basically, the generals, and these are Greeks. And they're going to fight back and forth throughout the silent 400 years. And they want Jerusalem or Judah as a buffer. Whoever controls this kind of controls the trade route. So this is a very important land. So they had war back and forth. And that's kind of where we're at. After Alexander had told the Jews, I will not oppress you, you can continue in your way, he blessed them and went his way to conquer the world. That was not the case when the Seleucids and Ptolemies began to rule and reign. Many details here. In fact, Daniel details this in a prophecy in the book. A whole chapter is given to this time period. But nonetheless, we continue here. In middle of that paragraph, in 168 B.C., Antiochus, that's Antiochus Epiphanes, coming out of the Seleucid Empire here, in the middle of the second paragraph, he attacked Jerusalem, burning and looting homes, and then selling the women and children into slavery. There was 22,000 Syrian soldiers stationed in Jerusalem at a thing called the Acra. And again, there's nothing left of this, per se, although I will have you turn to page 161 in your books. On page 161, I can show you where it was at. And again, they have found the footings, if you would, or the very base of it. And again, unless you're there and actually, you know, looking at it and measuring it, it's hard to see. But if you look right here on page 161, I'm standing on the Mount of Olives, looking over the Kidron Valley. And can you just tell kind of where we're at? Is that familiar after the few, kind of where we're at, what we're looking at? We're looking at the southern wall of the temple. So if I were to, well, let's do this right here. We got anything on the wall here? No, we don't. If we're in Jerusalem, here's the city of David. Here's Mount Moriah up here. Here's the Temple Mount right here. I'm standing over here on the Kidron Valley, or Mount of Olives, looking over the Kidron Valley, looking right here. This corner is the southeast corner of the Temple Mount. And that's probably right in that area is where Jesus was tempted to jump. That's a pretty good idea of where that took place. But anyway, as you look at that, you can see the stairs coming up towards it. And right in the middle of that picture, it says Acra. There's a little square right there. That is a fortress, a garrison that was built by the Seleucids there in Jerusalem to oversee the temple. In fact, they could shoot arrows down into the temple courtyard to control any kind of a riot. There was a huge building, a huge fortress, and it's a very important building or fortress throughout the Maccabean time period. People are going to hide in it. The Seleucids are going to take refuge in there. And eventually, when Simon, one of the Maccabees, becomes the king, the priest, they're just going to bulldoze it down. They want it destroyed. They don't want anything there. And they actually, potentially, they expand the temple to the south and actually build on top of some of the remains. So the Acra was a lot larger than that little square. It extended further up into the Temple Mount. But then they extended the Temple Mount down south. Now, did I just get you confused? I feel like I just rambled off a bunch of information there. If you see that wall right there where it says triple gate, the double gate, that is Herod's wall, or the location of Herod's southern wall of the Temple Mount. That was not there in the Maccabeans' time, or during the silent 400 years, during this war and the thing I'm talking about here. That would be moved further up towards the temple, where Solomon had left it. The Hasmoneans, or the Maccabees, are actually going to bring it down further, and then Herod is going to bring it down to its present location. And it's assumed that one of the reasons the Maccabees expanded the temple to the south was to help build over the top of that Acra that we can see right there. Nonetheless, we go back to page 6, and we just mentioned the Acra. They would remain in control of the stronghold until Judas's brother Simon drove all the Syrian troops 22 years later, and 142 drove them out. And now you've got, during that time period when Judas Maccabeus recaptures the temple, because the solution had gone onto the Temple Mount, they offered the pig meat on the altar, desecrated the temple, and took over. They're trying to stamp out Judaism. They're trying to get rid of the Jews, get rid of their word of God or their scriptures, their way of life. Just get rid of them. And the Maccabeans rose up and they had the great revolt. And Judas Maccabeus ends up taking the Temple Mount and cleansing the temple. It was called Hanukkah. That's where they ran out of oil and the lights kept burning even though they didn't have any oil. It's a Jewish holiday today, of course, but it's actually not a biblical holiday. It's during this time period. Hanukkah is celebrating the retaking of the temple after this period. Well, 22 years later, Simon bulldozes it, and the Maccabees, and this is important now, the Maccabees become known as the Hasmoneans, and they begin to rule and reign. And so now we're going to have what is called the Hasmonean time period. Hasmonean. And that is basically the generations, the couple generations that followed after the Maccabean revolt and the driving out of the Seleucid Empire. Historically, the Seleucid Empire, the Greek Empire in Syria, and Ptolemy's empire or kingdom down in the south, they begin to fade and become weaker. They're fighting each other. And eventually there's a power coming from the west, even recorded in Daniel and prophecy, when ships from the west arrive and they end up taking control of Egypt. And that is the Romans coming, because Egypt was producing a tremendous amount of grain. The Romans needed it for their civilization and for their military. So whenever Ptolemy and Egypt became kind of weak and looked like they were faltering, Rome began to intervene, preserve Egypt, try to maintain power. But eventually, Rome was just going to just take over the whole, you know, Syria, Jerusalem, and Egypt. So the coming power now is Rome. But between the Greeks, the Seleucid Empire, and Ptolemy, again, I'll say this, Alexander was the general of the Greeks. Following him was the Seleucid/Ptolemy time period. They were all Greeks. During this Seleucid-Ptolemy time period, towards the end, they were driven out by the Maccabees, and in Jerusalem, we have the Hasmonean time period, where the Hasmoneans are ruling. They're a priestly tribe that are ruling as priests and kings of Jerusalem. This is going to continue down until Herod shows up and marries one of the princesses of the Hasmoneans, Mariam. These guys are eventually all taken over by Rome. Rome is going to come in because, if you don't mind me saying, the Hasmoneans are going to split into two political parties. And you know them, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The conservatives and the liberals. That's exactly what they were. The Sadducees did not believe most of the Bible that was true. The Sadducees did not believe in angels. They did not believe in a resurrection. You can hear this in the dialogue with Jesus. They are critical of all of the supernatural. What we see is what we get. They were the liberals of the day. Liberal theologically, liberal politically. The Pharisees were the ones that actually took the mantle of the Maccabees and the Hasmoneans of, we must preserve our scripture, we must preserve our traditions, we must go back to the Constitution type of attitude. You know, they were the Tea Party, if you want to. But anyway, they were the Pharisees, and they ended up fighting with each other. The Sadducees, when they were in power, when they had a, and again, the Hasmonean family was split. So some of the royalty was, you know, Sadducees, some of it was Pharisees. Whenever a Sadducee would get in power, they actually would have time where they would crucify Pharisees, or the Pharisees vice versa. So when Jesus got crucified in Jerusalem, it wasn't like, what is going on? I mean, they'd been crucifying Jews. Jews had been crucifying each other, you know, back here during the silent 400 years, including Roman coming in and doing this. So anyway, this is what was going on. They break out in a civil war, and there's civil war. Jerusalem is being trashed by the Jews. The Jews are, they're fighting each other. And Rome actually is going to come in the midst of this and try and resolve the conflict. They're going to be invited in by one of these groups, and they're going to try to resolve it. And ultimately, Rome is going to, with the invitation of the Jews, in fact, it was brought before the Senate, they said, we want to become a Roman province. We want to be brought into the Roman jurisdiction. You can help control us. And if you look right there on the bottom paragraph on page 6, the Hasmoneans ruled until the Roman general Pompey entered Jerusalem in 63 B.C., amid civil war between two Hasmonean brothers and their political parties, the Pharisees and Sadducees. The Hasmonean government continued to deteriorate until 47 B.C. So again, it sounds like a long time ago, a lot of years, but really 63 to 47 B.C. I mean, that's just like a couple presidential terms. I mean, it's deteriorating. And now by this time, Julius Caesar is in charge of Rome. And he appoints Antipater. At this time, Jerusalem is going to be brought in, and this Roman Senate is going to be like, I don't know if we want to take control of that mess or not. who really wants to deal with this? And finally they begged, will you please take control? We'll pay our share of the taxes. And they actually invited Rome in to come into their government and resolve the conflict. Can you imagine that? Again, because they were destroying themselves. I mean, they were completely destroying themselves. They needed Rome. And so it was passed by the Senate, and they're brought in as a Roman province. And Julius Caesar is going to appoint, as we've talked about, a guy by the name of Antipater. Antipater is an Edomite. He's from down south. He's from a descendant of Esau. He's not Israeli. He's not Jewish. But he is a descendant of Esau from the Edomites. And he was brought in and given authority to rule as a king under Julius Caesar and rule Jerusalem. And Antipater is going to be, or he is Herod's father. He's got also a son named Phanelius, I believe. Where is this? I got it written here somewhere. No. I'll think of it in a minute. That's not correct, but we'll find out here in a minute. Antipater immediately began to rebuilding the walls. Remember, the walls have been destroyed again, that Nehemiah had built up had been destroyed again by the Seleucid revolt, and we can see some of this built up by the Hasmoneans. And Antipater begins to rebuild the city walls. Jerusalem that had been damaged during the previous 123 years of fighting. Okay, after Antipater was poisoned in 43 B.C., a year after Julius Caesar was assassinated, his son Herod was appointed by Mark Antony. So replacing Julius Caesar is Mark Antony. And now you know what's going to happen. Mark Antony appoints Herod, who is the son of Antipater, to be the king of Jerusalem. Now, he's not going to see the city for several years because the Jews do not want Herod. They didn't like Antipater. They're Jews. They don't want to be ruled by an Edomite put in power by the Romans in the West. You understand the whole dilemma there. They don't want this, so they killed Antipater. Herod now is going to be named the king. Mark Antony names him the king. Rome at this time, after the death of Julius Caesar, a guy by the name of Octavian, and you know this guy, Octavian, a group of is going to split, and there's going to be a civil war in Rome between Octavian and Mark Antony. Herod sides with Mark Antony because Mark Antony put Herod in power. He's the Roman, this is the going power of Rome right here, put Herod in power, so he sides with Mark Antony. But as the battle goes, Mark Antony falls in love with Cleopatra, you know the whole, you know, the story there. They're both killed. Mark Antony and Cleopatra are both killed, and Herod is left without his support system. And Octavian is going to win the civil war and is going to be named by the Senate, is going to be named Caesar. I can't spell Caesar very good. Caesar Augustus. I get all the letters mixed up. Caesar Augustus. And that's, now you're into the Gospels. When Caesar Augustus issued a decree that all of Israel should be taxed, that is Octavian, who's been now renamed Caesar Augustus. Guess who's called to Rome? Herod is called to Rome to appear before Caesar Augustus. Caesar Augustus, because Herod had fought against him in the civil war. So Herod walks in and expecting the worst, and this is just typical of Herod. When they call Herod the Great, he's not a good man. He's not a Christian man, but he is a great man. And he appears before Caesar Augustus, and Caesar Augustus says, now tell me, he says, why should I not kill you? And basically Herod says, listen, I am a true friend. Mark Antony was my friend. When he went to war, I supported him with everything I had. Now that he's lost, I've lost my friend Mark Antony. I do believe, Caesar, you need a friend in Jerusalem or in Israel. And Caesar Augustus was so impressed with the answer. He said, well, indeed, I do need a friend. And Herod at that time was ready to switch and support Caesar Augustus. He sent him back and says, you are now the king, expanded his territory, and he returns to Jerusalem. So now we are in the second paragraph on page 7, although it took Herod until 37, so he's named emperor in 43 B.C., he never saw the city until 37 B.C. Because just because Caesar Augustus and Mark Antony says, you are the king, doesn't mean he gets to ride in on a horse, all the Jews bow down and worship him. When they heard he was king, they shut the gates, put the military out in the war on the battlefield, and would not allow him to get close. And so he had a fight from 43, it took him that many years to fight into the city to take the throne. And of course, when he gets there, his poll or his popularity rating is zero. There's 0%. Now, eventually, a political party is going to break out of that, and you know the name of that political party. Jesus dealt with the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and a new political party that began to support Herod called Herodians. And they are also part of Jesus' dilemma when they were the ones that supported Rome and supported Herod. So that is now Herod is in power, and Herod is going to become a magnificent, magnificent builder. He wants to impress Rome. He loves Rome. He loves the Western culture. He wants to bring that to Jerusalem. He wants to create Jerusalem into Rome. And that is why the whole Herod's temple, when the disciples asked Jesus, aren't these magnificent stones talking about the temple and the temple mound? Indeed it was. That was Herod trying to impress the Roman clientele. Well, it goes on here. It says, although it took Herod from 37 B.C. to fight his way into Jerusalem and take possession of the throne, he loved the city and its architecture. The days of Herod's rule, the Herodian age, began the greatest period of construction Jerusalem had ever seen. And the remains of Herod's stones, there's no doubt, once you understand what a Herodian stone looks like, well, go to page 104. Once you see this stone, you can just walk around Jerusalem and pick it out. Page 104, this is called the Herodian stone, or the ashlar of Herod's construction. Page 104. And they're cut in the quarry, in Solomon's quarry. You can see the quarry where they're cut. It's just north underneath the Muslim quarter and other places where they brought these stones in. If you look on page 104, you can see a stone. And what they would do, these are cut. And it's magnificent how they cut them. You know, here's their stone. And then they're going to have embossed on the edge. You're going to have a little bit of a decorative edge all the way around it. Herod was, now listen, when Nehemiah slapped the wall together, they built it like in, what is it, 52 days? I mean, they're just slapping stuff. They're just trying to get some defenses up. Herod, every stone is milled or decorated, and you can see there, well, you can see on page 104, how that embossed edge going all the way around. And then the next picture over there shows you how they were stacked. The picture next there is part of the temple wall, and you've got the 2-inch embossed, or this edge, cut right at decorative edge going around there. Very nice, very clean. This is a smooth surface. Some of the stones, the Hasmonean stones, they're still rough right here. You can see those two. They're still, they've got like a rocky look to them. I mean, you may like them better in your yard if you're decorating or something. But Herod wanted these stones flat faced and then trimmed right here. And you can see how there's a 2-inch trim going around there. But also notice how they built. I'll tell you this real quickly. Here's how Herod was in charge of it. He brought in the best architecture, the best builders. But here's how they would build. If you go way down to the bottom of the Temple Mount wall, and they have tunneled down to it because it's buried, way to the bottom, we're looking at the side of the wall, like we're looking down the wall this way. So this is the length of the wall. Does that make sense to you? We're looking down the wall. This would be the face of the stone. This would be the back of the stone. The next stone would be just slightly smaller. You see, a half inch smaller. And it steps up just like this. So when you step back and look at it, you can't see the distinction, but when you get up to it, this stone is clearly half an inch or a full inch smaller than this stone. Same thing, this stone is 1 inch smaller or half an inch smaller on one side, and continue to build to an enormous height these walls, and there's no way they're going to go anywhere. They're huge stones, but each of the faces is going to be decorated. So as you look up this wall, the whole wall looks flat, but each stone is decorated, and you can see the Herodian stones. On page 105, you can see I'm looking down one of the walls there. Again, it's 2,000 years old, so it's kind of chipped up, and some of it's been exposed. When they dig down, and they go down to these bottom stones, like today, for example, if you're at the western wall and go up and touch the western wall, you're touching right here. But here's the sidewalk of Herod's day. You understand? It's buried, because the city's been destroyed for 2,000 years and just keep rubble. And they've tunneled down here. They've got tunnels down there, western wall tunnels. You can walk around, touch this and see this. And these stones here are, in a sense, beautiful. They're smooth. They're stone, but they're still unweathered. These stones up here, they've been hit with rifle fire. They've been hit with machine gun fire. They've been hit, you know, rocks have slammed up against it with catapults, plus just as a weathering. These stones, they look the same as these, but these are, in a sense, mint condition down here. Yes, right. And now you're talking about Solomon's day. That's Solomon. Herod's quarries, Solomon and Herod's quarries, they're right there underneath. A lot of them are right there underneath. We got so many things going on right now. Let's just turn these pages, look at some things, okay? Here on this page right here, page 105, you can see the, on top of page 105, that is the southwest corner. Like we just looked at the southeast corner, now we're looking at the southwest corner. And another thing that we can see on these stones when they're stacked up, I'm going to show you a picture of this here in just a minute in the book. When they're stacked up, now we're looking down at it. This stone, I'm looking down at the southwest corner, would be long. this stone on top of it would be long this way, and they would stagger it, and so they'd lock them together. That's what you see right here. You can see on page 105, the top right photo, that middle stone going to the left is long, but then the one right on top of it is shorter, but it's long going the other way. And you see how long one of those stones are right below that picture. I'm looking right down the southern wall. That's the corner, and you see how long that stone is. And these are Herodian stones. These are not like imitations. These are the remains. So when people say there's nothing left of the temple, or the only thing that's left of the temple is the western wall, that's not the case. The base of the wall goes all the way around. It's still there. It's just, and there's nothing left of the temple itself. This is the retaining wall. We'll talk about that here in a minute. Turn the page again. We got more pictures. Page 106, I'm looking down another, just the same stone. I'm looking the other way, right along the southern wall, how long that stone is. The picture on the top of page 106 with little squares, that's what I was showing you, how they're short and long, overlapping each other. I've kind of drawn lines around so you kind of see where they're at. That's how it's stacked. Now, once you get to the top stone there that I've got drawn in that black box, now up on top of that, those walls indeed were pushed over by Rome, but it was the higher walls, if I can say it, the smaller stones, the stones you could get, 50 men and a couple pry bars and push one off. But by the time you get down to these bottom stones, you're not moving them. I mean, you're not going to move these stones. And there's nowhere to dump them. I mean, you're down on ground level, Steve. Right. Okay, good question. Make sure I answer that. No. Yep, let me see if I can explain it to you here a little bit, but that's a good question. Again, I'm looking at the bottom page 106. You're going to have, I'm looking up the western wall, right? Against the western wall of the camera, looking straight up. See some vine or bushes, shrubs growing out of it. But you see the 2-inch chiseled edge there. And on the next page, you see some more examples of the Herodian stones that are still in the wall. Some of those stones, when they were pushed over, they were picked back up later by, if it be Crusaders or Muslims or Romans, and built back into the wall of the city. Some of those stones were taken down and built used in 135 to build a wall around the church. Well, it's going to be the Church of the Holy Sepulchre by Hadrian. So some of the very foundation stones in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre are some of these temple stones that were pushed off the temple wall or from the temple and taken there. So they're scattered. You can see some of them, you can see them show up in the outside walls somewhere. They're just been scattered throughout Jerusalem. So they always show up. This is where they originated from. Okay, page 107, there's a couple simple ways of moving some of the smaller stones. You can see on top of page 107, they're in that wheel-like. They just, put it in there and just roll it. Of course, you're going to have them pulled there on the little... with the little logs underneath. That's one way. If you look on page 108, this was just moments before the Israeli police came and spoke with me. I have walked over the Arab graves. Yeah, I'll cut that out of the video. To get up to the wall. And right there you can see there's these notches. In here's your stone with the border going around. And you can see this right here. There's a little raised portion right here that's not been chiseled off. They'd have one on both sides. They'd wrap a rope around that. That's a rope. And they'd put it on both sides. And then they could lift it or swing it with that little thing. You've got a little tripod there underneath there. They could lift it up with those and swing it into place and position it, set it down. And once it was set, then the craftsmen would come by and chisel those off, make it flat. And because they were still building the temple, they had just finished building. I think they built until 64 AD. And the invasion began in 66 AD with the Jewish revolt. So there are some things that never were completed. There's another one, you can see a couple of them there that you can see where those little remains are there to help lift the stone. That made it very strong. That's one way of building. I got to answer those questions yet. On page 109, Tony is standing on the top of the southern steps, if you come up the steps on the southern side, and she is standing in front of one of the rows or the courses of those Herodian stones that she's standing in front of. Those are original Herodian stones that she's standing in front of there. Of course, they've been weathered and beat up. Some more pictures. Now, as we get down there towards the bottom on the right side of page 109, now that photo is in the Western Wall tunnels. And let me see if I can explain this to you. I got several things I'm going to explain to you. And again, if you don't understand, if I say something that doesn't make sense, stop me. Here is the Temple Mount retaining wall. The temple would be, let's say, right here. This is the southern. Here's the steps coming up. The Acra would have been right here. Tony is standing right here in that one picture. But this is the western wall. And this right here, this part of the western wall, well, all of this is, you can see all of this part right here. This is all out in the open. You can see this. The western wall itself, it plaza, is right here. When you walk up and take a picture by the western wall, it's happening right here. This is all still covered up. But they have tunneled along this way right here, and you can walk along through here and see it. In fact, when you get to right here, you can see the sidewalk. There's the same sidewalk that you can see, or road that you can see here. There's the same road that you can see down at the Pool of Siloam. And that's where we're at on the page 109. You can see right there. And what you're looking at right there, there's many things that have taken place here, is you can see the Herodian stones, correct, on the bottom right of page 109. But then there's like a something sticking out of the wall with something else in front of it. You understand? There's a layer in front of it. That is a remains of a cistern, because it was underground, that was used by Muslims, most likely some Muslim group, not because they're Muslim, but because they occupied the city. And they would dig down and fill it with water, use those as cisterns. And what they had to do to make it watertight, they would put plaster on the western wall here, and they'd just build a big cistern underneath their city. So when they, underneath their houses, so when they wanted water, they'd just lower a bucket down underneath their floor into a cistern underneath their house, which is just going down into the rubble that had been there for, you know, the different decades. And what they did, they cut out a square in those Herodian stones, cut out another stone and stuck it in there, so it kind of like a dowel, if you know, like you do woodworking or some kind of a dowel. And then they put plaster on there, and that dowel or that piece of wood or piece of stone would then help hold the plaster and adhere it to the wall. And you can see the big deal, that's what that is. Now, go to page 110. Now we're talking about Herod's Temple Mount. I've still got a couple questions hanging here that we need to address. But if you look right here, you can see where it's got where it says top of Mount Moriah, Ark sat here on the bedrock. Okay? You see that little line there. Then there's a square wall going right around. Not that huge rectangular wall, but it's got a little dot on it. It says Solomon's original platform wall. So here's, if I can explain this to you, this is how it would have worked. Is here's Mount Moriah. Okay, let's do it this way. Here's Mount Moriah. All right. And Solomon is going to build, he wants to put the temple right up in here. Of course, it's on the top, it's not very level. So he's going to build a retaining wall right here, going around this, actually it's a little high right there, I'm going to have to move Mount Moriah up a little bit. There we go. All right, and so this is his retaining wall that he built all the way around Mount Moriah. And then they filled this in. So that's all filled. That is why underneath the Temple Mount there's all kinds of tunnels. There's tunnels all around underneath it. The priests use them. In fact, the Ark of the Covenant may be down there in a tunnel that's been protected or covered up. That's one definite theory. The Jews still think the temple, the Ark of the Covenant, is underneath the Temple Mount somewhere, where Jeremiah and those people put it. That was all fill. And so you can see where Solomon would have built the original platform. Now, just so we keep on this, if you look to the south, or it'd be to the right of the picture, where I've got written there, Hasmonean platform extended, 165. So a little bit to the south. So here's Solomon's original platform. Here's Mount Moriah. The Ark of the Covenant would have sat here. The Hasmoneans extended it down this way a little further. And you can see right here in the wall you can see the connecting of the rocks. They're just butted against each other. They're not overlapping. They're just straight up against each other. And this would have been the Hasmoneans' extension, building on top of the old Acre, that old fortress of the Seleucids. Herod comes along, and he says, okay, he had to convince the priests, because they've still got, sitting up here on the Temple Mount, they've still got the remains of Zerubbabel's temple. Remember when Nehemiah came back and they built the wall? Zerubbabel had built the temple. It's small. Remember how the people saw it? The young people were excited. Oh, we built the temple. The older people that had seen Solomon's temple before they went into captivity started crying. It's kind of like, this is not the temple. This is a garage. This is a place to put your lawnmower. We did it. We rebuilt the temple. You haven't rebuilt the temple. So that was still standing there. Now, Herod takes power. He wants to be the king of the Jews. He wants to please the Jews. For example, Herod never put his image on a coin because the Jews did not like it. The Caesars would put their image on the coin. Herod did not want to upset his Jewish people. He wanted to be the king of the Jews. They hated him, and his poll numbers are going up. He's even got his own political party called the Herodians, as we've mentioned. So he wants to please the Jews. He wants to impress the Romans. So he is going to expand. He said, I want to rebuild the temple. He convinces the priest that he will, because they thought it was a ploy. He says, tear down your temple, I'll build you a big, magnificent one. They go, yeah, right. That's what Antiochus Epiphanes tried to do, except he didn't come out as nice like that. He just came and tried to destroy it. He says, no. And they said, we will do it. We'll trust you. If you'll have all the building materials setting here, then we will slowly dismantle. So they take down a wall and build the new wall. And we're talking just the temple mount here, or the temple itself. And Herod builds them a magnificent temple. This is the one that Jesus would have saw. But also, he wants to impress everybody else also with the size. So now you can see Solomon's original temple mount there. Herod is going to expand it further to the south. He's going to expand it to the west. He's going to expand it to the north. And so there you've got Solomon's temple mount, the Herodian expansion, and then Herod's overall expansion of the city. Now, you know what that means. That means if we would dig into here, you can find this wall. There's no doubt. It's there. There's no doubt Solomon's wall is there. In fact, these stones right here, these have been seen. And I'm not sure if I'm going to have a chance to show that to you. I have to spend 10 minutes looking for it. Those stones have been seen. They were identified. They were identified by Rittmeyer, Lean Rittmeyer from England, a famous archaeologist. He's done great work. He always is finding these things, and within a matter of months, they're covered up by the Muslims. I was fortunate enough to put a map on one of my blogs. I was identifying some things, put a map up on one of my blogs, and identified a couple locations using the Madaba map, which we'll talk about that. And I got a comment one day saying, you've misidentified the Church of Siloam, Lean Rittmeyer. It's like, oh, certainly, sir. I stopped here, changed it. Thank you for identifying my error and made the correction immediately. So that's kind of like, oh my gosh, you're getting an E from Lean. It's like, oh, this is huge. Anyway, he is one of the legendary scholars, and he's alive today, of all of these things. But he identified these, we'll have to talk about something, the top of two or three stones of Solomon's original wall. Because there's several reasons I can show you that. It's very clear that's definitely what it is. But it's covered up now. They've put slabs on it, put some concrete over it. You can't see it anymore. But the evidence that it's underneath there, the angles and stuff, it's still clear. I mean, you know he was right because you can't see it. It's gone. Anyway, let's talk about this page right here. If you look on page 111, you can see that this is a model of Herod's temple. That is not the real thing, just so I'm sure you know that. That is a photograph of a model. That would be me standing on the Mount of Olives looking over the Kidron Valley into the front courtyard there of Solomon's temple. If you look to the bottom of that page right there, you can see the temple just a little bit in the left, just in a little bit of the left of that photograph, the temple, and then the rest of the Temple Mount, you're looking at the north side. You're standing right here looking, and you're just catching a little bit of the temple here looking this way. This is where your photograph right there is of. And you can see Fort Antonia that was built right here. The Pool of Bethesda, which is up there, and the Temple Mount, and Solomon's colonnade, very important, we'll talk about it as we go, Solomon's colonnade going all the way around. So you could walk all the way around in Herod's day, all the way around this temple. There was pillars all the way around with a colonnade, which just means a covered walkway that you could walk all the way around. It was a beautiful place, and this is where the church started. The church that they used to meet in these places, Solomon's Colonnade. This is where they'd have church right over in one of these places here, most likely down at this side here. Okay, anyway, let's go back to that other place and answer Steve's question about how they, because these huge stones that they had to move into place. Here, let me see if I can say this. Again, they're going to drag them. They're going to roll these stones. And when you originally you put your first stone in place right here. And remember, this is a retaining wall. Here's Mount Moriah. This is a retaining wall that you're just going to try and build it up this high and then fill this all in so it looks all level. This is actually Mount Moriah where the temple's going to be. But you'll be walking over here on the Temple Mount. It's all fill. So here's how everybody, not everybody, here's how there's Mount Moriah here. Here's your first stone. You drug that into place. And what you would do then, let's see, right here. Here's your first, let's make it a good one. There we go. That's not, what's that mean?
Well, when you go through the tunnel, you see this
Right. There is, yeah, you can see some bedrock where the same Herodian pattern is cut into the bedrock to match. Is that what you're saying? To get the next stone on top of here, what they would do is they would fill this in. And then they could roll it up, they could bring it in here, and then they'd slide this over here. And then they'd fill this in. So you're getting this work area here, and they bring the next stone in and set it on top of here. And they'd fill, you understand the idea? So that you're not actually lifting the stone, you know, it's not like this. Eventually, you're going to have to put those final stones up, something like that. But it's not like you've got this huge, massive stone where you're like, let's go lift it way up in here and set it on top of here. You're dragging it in here. And then you'd have this whole thing would be a ramp coming up. Like, you know, so the dirt would be an incline, and then you just slide it over. Out here, it just keeps getting taller because this would be your western wall. This is where the people would be standing to look at the western wall right here. But in here, you're just filling this in. And in Herod's day, what's right here? There's already Solomon's wall. And so actually what you're building in here, you're actually just filling it in between Solomon's wall and Herod's new wall. Does that make sense? So that's why, again, if you could somehow tear this down, which we're not going to do or anybody's going to, and dig into here, you could actually see Solomon's wall. Otherwise, where did it go? I mean, they didn't tear the whole thing down. Yes, ma'am. Right, yeah, that fill just becomes now the level surface where they pave it up here with, you know, some kind of stone, and now the temple's built up here. There, the wall extends up here, so now you got a protective wall here. Solomon's colonnade runs right through along the side here, and you just walk around up in here. Right, this would be easy to tunnel through because it's all fill. It'd be hard to tunnel over here because it'd be like Hezekiah's tunnel, you're chipping through rock. Here you're just moving the fill out of the way. I've never been down there. I've never been down in those tunnels. You can get access to them if you know the right people who can get in. The Muslims are very sensitive because they always think the Jews are underneath, they're undermining underneath the Dome of the Rock, that somebody's just going to collapse, and then the Jews will take over. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, and people get killed because of that. Does that make sense? That's how they put those up. Now, you got Solomon's temple there, and let's turn the page. Now you got another photograph of the southern, again, this is a model. This is the southern look. You got the southeast corner. And the steps coming up to the triple and double gates. You can see that. We'll talk more about Robinson's Arch. But you see Solomon's colonnade up there on the top. Solomon's colonnade was actually built. I mean, there's a colonnade going all the way around, but there's a very elaborate building system there on the south, which was called Solomon's. Faziel. There you see up there, top left corner. Faziel. That's Herod's brother, Faziel. And he built three towers. We'll talk about that. Three towers. Named one of them Faziel. They're like luxury towers. The next picture is a picture from the southwest. You're looking at the southwest corner of the Temple Mount. Again, it's a model. Turn the page, page 114. We're outside. We're outside on the Mount of Olives, looking over the Kidron Valley, and you can see the Muslim graves there in front. And then I've got that label right there. Solomon's original Temple Mount is to the left of that line, and you can see Herod's extension to the north. Rittmeyer, in one of his books, has got some great photographs and some diagrams showing the stones. And you can date the age of the stones, the way they're cut right down to where I'm pointing. Herodian stones, the offset stone, Nehemiah stones, those are all interlocking right there, coming together. By the time I got there last year, I was all excited. I had Lean Rittmeyer's books, and I was looking through. I'm going to go there. I found the location. I'm going to take the picture. When I got there, it's covered up with all kinds of just junk, rocks, and there's some metal wire laying there. It's just covered up with junk. It's like you can't even see it. And of course, I'd already been approached by the Israeli police, so I didn't go up, or Jerusalem police. I didn't go up there and move anything. Obviously, I wanted to go. The Golden Gate is right there. Yeah, you can see the Golden Gate. No, down there, you see where it says offset stone, Herodian stone? See, that they covered that up. You cannot see. And you see, I've got the picture below that. That's the best I could get. I'm just pointing. Actually, all I'm doing is pointing there at where they are at, because I could not see them like Lean Rittmeyer could before, because he's out investigating all these things, and no one knows what anything is, but Lean Rittmeyer, identifying them, publishes something, and as soon as it's published, it's like, oh my gosh, there's proof there's a temple here, and to cover it up. And then when everybody else comes by, all you get is Lean Rittmeyer's photographs, and it's been covered up, and that happened a couple other times. You look on page 115. You're looking at the Old Testament wall, or excuse me, Old Testament, where, again, that wall up to a certain height is all rebuilt. Okay? It's going to be the foundation stones that are still the original stones, because the top stones were easily knocked off. So what you see there is not necessarily the original stones. In fact, it's not the original stones higher up, but it is the original wall line. Down below is some of the original stones. But you can see as you go down there where the wall bends, that's the extension to the south, that's the Hasmonean. And then there's a straight joint where the joints do not, they don't, the stones don't overlap. It's just a straight, it's like the end. In fact, if you don't mind me saying this, I get kind of rambling here. It comes down like this. Actually, it's going this way, so we're looking at it from the Mount of Olives. You come down here, and this was the end of the Hasmonean. Here's your stones, okay? And they're interlocked. You know how they do it, stones, you know, like this. You understand what I'm saying? Like this. So you can see how they're like this. And then this, because it's the edge of a building, just like in your homes, your sheetrock corners, they get chipped and dinged. These corners are chipped, especially down here where they got bumped with people carrying luggage or, you know, a chariot driving by or whatever, a worker chipped. And they're rounded corners. But now, today, so you can still see that, but it continues down. That's where Herod added on to the Herodian. And now here, again, the stones, the reason we know this, because now here goes the stones like this. There's a straight joint right there, and you can stand right there and look at it. And this would be the Hasmonean extension. This would be the old part right here of Solomon's end, and this would be the Herodian. And the stones, especially down at the bottom, you can see the Herodian stones, they don't match up. And plus, this corner is rounded. So anyway, that's just very interesting. And you can see now I'm looking at the bottom, page 115, I'm looking down at it. See Solomon's original platform, the Hasmonean extension, and the Herodian extension going all the way around there. Turn the page. We got more walls. Okay, we got a picture of the straight joint. Page 116, there I am, I'm pointing at the straight joint. Again, it may be harder to see in the photograph than my simple drawing right here, but can you see that straight joint going up right there? Now realize, this kind of makes my point. There where I'm standing in that picture and going up about, 10 rows or so, you can see the straight joint. But once you get above that, now it's gone. Because that part was knocked down, and it's been rebuilt over the years by different groups of people. You can go back and try and study and figure out who built all that and redid it. You can see one little slot in there. You see on the top left quadrant of that photograph where the arrows would be shot out, right up there, that little slot there. But anyway, that you can see to the left is Herod's expansion. To the right is still the Hasmonean. Yes, please. Right. I should not know. Yeah. Yeah, that's when they says, what they want. They asked me, they wanted to see. I look legitimate enough because they asked me if they wanted to see my papers. I was like, so I've got a driver's license from Iowa. And they said, get out of there. I got an Iowa teaching certificate. Get out of there.
How long were you there before they?
Oh, 10 minutes. I mean, I was just, because there's a sidewalk right there. I mean, it's like from here to that wall, maybe, right there. So Tony's with the picture, and she goes, "You shouldn't do that." I said, because I saw a picture of Lee and Rittenmeyer pointing at it. I want to do the same thing, but he had papers. Yeah, that's not, you shouldn't do that. I wouldn't. There would be no history. There just would have been. There would just been righteous indignation. Is only that would have taken place. There's other things we could talk about right here. There's still the shadow of the remains of an ark. And again, we haven't talked about on the west side. There's Robinson's Arch coming down that you can still see how they access the temple. You've got steps from the south going up, and then on the west side you've got Robinson's Arch, and on the right side or the east side you've got another type of an arch. And again, we won't go through that all right now. But there's still the shadow of the remains of the actual stairway that went up, and you would enter into the gate. And Jesus would have used that to enter. You would have used the southern steps, the Robinson's Arch, or this one on the east side. We'll talk about that as we go. Turn to page 118. Now I'm actually standing there looking at that southern, southeast corner wall. And you can see, I try to get it in the photograph. There's a bend right where the Hasmonean wall matches the Solomon's wall. There's a bend that you can see. And again, I try to capture it in the photo. You can maybe follow the very top line of the wall and kind of see how it bends out to the right there, kind of where the arrow's at. And I tried to capture the best I could with a photograph, but I couldn't. Western Wall. Okay, page 119, there's your Western Wall. Now, if again, there's so many, I'm just rambling here. I'm way off. I'm just rambling, okay? So I'm just turning pages. You can see the Western Wall. There's many Herodian stones. We're going to talk about this in a minute. But you see there how the bottom row and a half, the bottom chorus and a half is dark, right? You can see that there's a little dark line. That's not a shadow. That is stone. When the Jews took control in 1967, that whole area, there was nothing but an alleyway. You could walk down an alleyway and see the Western Wall. And people had been coming there for years to touch the wall and pray. When the Jews got control, they took that entire area right there, and you can see another photo of it, with the plaza, that flat pavement there, and they just bulldozed all the houses. Everything that was there, they just bulldozed it. It's their city now. They bulldozed it and dug down that gray area. You can see a course and a half. They dug down lower, moved the dirt out so you could see another course and a half of the Herodian Wall, and built that plaza right there. So today when you walk up there, that's fairly new addition to the Western Wall. Does that make sense? Beautiful question. Turn the page. Finally, a question that I'm ready for.
So that dark gray area is like
yes, from being buried for 2,000 years. Now, on your question on top of page 120. Now, see, get orientated to this. If you were standing up on the Temple Mount wall, up on the Temple Mount, walking around by the Dome of the Rock, you'd be on the right side there on that thick black line where it says Temple Mount platform surface to the top of the wall. Do you understand what I'm talking about? You're up on the tip right there. If you turn right there and you look to the right there, you'll be able to see the Dome of the Rock, and you can walk around and you can take pictures right there. But if you go on the other side and you drop down where it says, well, I'm not sure what it says. It doesn't say anything. It's just got the next line. You got some dirt underneath it. That is the Western Wall Plaza. There, you're standing right there touching the Western Wall saying, wow, I'm touching history. These are huge stones. You're taking photographs. This is a great opportunity right there. And now, there are 17 courses of stones below that plaza. It's like they dug down a course and a half, like the stained wall, it's dug down a course and a half. There, right there at that level, they could have dug down 17 more courses to get to the footings or the bedrock that wall is built on. And so I've just identified this now that we're looking at it. I had to do some study and research to try and figure it all out. But the top four courses were added in the 600s by that group called the Umayyads. I'm not sure. I've never heard anybody say it. I've only read the word. I need somebody to teach me. But those top four courses were put in there in the 600s. The 14 layers added in 1866 during the Ottoman period. There's three courses added in 1967 by the Sunni Muslim cleric in charge of Jerusalem's Islamic holy places. Because on the right side, that's controlled by the Muslims. On the left side, that's controlled by the Jews. The Muslims have controlled the Temple Mount, so they just had to retain the wall there. Some interesting facts about the Western Wall. The wall consists of a total of 45 courses of stones with 17 underground and 28 above ground. The overall height of the wall from the foundation to the top is 105 feet from the very bottom to the very top. 43 feet of the wall, 17 courses, remain buried below the level of the surface of the plaza. 62 feet of the wall is above ground. So when you look at the wall, how tall it is, it's 62 feet tall. In fact, if you look at that picture to the right there, where they've got the dark sky in the background taken at night there, what you see above there, that's 63 feet, but below is another 43 feet of wall. And the stones, as you can see, how it kind of tapers, that's that coming in half an inch each time as they're stacked on top of each other. And it's not going anywhere. Now, realize the sidewalk, the Herodian sidewalk, would have been a lot lower, obviously. Let's go to the next page. If you look at page 120, well, okay. Look on top of page 120, and I've got those identified there too, just numbered in the picture there, kind of the years. So you've got seven layers. When you're standing at the Western Wall, and you're standing on the plaza taking photographs, you count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 courses. Those are Herodian. Those are stones that were there in Jesus' time, in the New Testament time. And it would have gone higher, except those are the stones that were pushed off by the Romans when they tried to destroy the place. I'll show you some other things. There's some stones that were so big that they tried to chip them. You can see where the Romans chipped the stones, and they're so huge. It's like, this is crazy. Let's go. And they just left them there. If you look on page 121, now we're looking at the Western Wall of the Temple. It's a model. Actually, this model is in the Western Wall tunnels. If you go through the Western Wall tunnels, this is one of the models they'll have down there for you to look at. I will point out here, because I've mentioned it and we want to talk about it eventually, is Robinson's Arch there on the southwest corner. That's one of the accesses. Realize, again, on the southern wall, you get access by steps. On the western wall, you could access it up Robinson's Arch, a series of stairs that went in a gateway right there. Barclay's Gate and Lintel, that's mentioned right there too. That's another way of getting in. You can see the remains of that gate today. But then you see that square that I've got drawn on there. That is the Herodian stones in the western wall as seen today. So that is basically where the western wall is at, right about where that square is at. Those are the seven layers of the Herodian stones that are still visible today. So understand, when you look at the western wall and you see, wow, look at those seven Herodian layers of stone, I can get a perspective of how huge that whole place was. Mm-hmm. They've dug down there. And they were doing that in the 1800s. Warren and Wilson, a couple guys that did some extreme excavation. I don't know if it's the 1830s. I've got a reference in the book here. I forget. 1830s, 1860s, when they first got a chance to go into the land. They were deceptive, and we'd never want to be deceptive. You know, never, you know, go where you shouldn't go. But they came in as waterworks people. They're going to help supply water. And they came in as basically plumbers. And so they were given permission to access the water, but they weren't accessing water. They were drilling tunnels, cutting tunnels. And there's some of the greatest pictures by Wilson and Warren at this time of them going down in these ungodly shafts. I mean, deep down in with flashlights, just tunneling down in the middle of the city and then tunneling up until they hit the western wall. And then taking pictures or drawing. They didn't have cameras. They'd draw and tunnel up the wall. So a lot of these things, even today, when people talk about excavating, what they did, they tunnel all around underneath the city. Their charts and their diagrams are still used to help locate things and verify things. And so, they should. And you can still see some of the Warren shafts. They got them covered up with plexiglass, and you can look down there. And it's just, there is a diagram, or drawing, because they get on this little thing, someone would lower them down on a rope. They'd be standing on a little platform. And there's a picture of this lady who's got some kind of a nice 1800s dress on, you know, with a little bonnet and stuff with her umbrella type of thing. And she was visiting, and so there's a picture of her being lowered down because they're bringing tours in, you know, letting people see stuff. But they didn't have flashlights. They have candles. You know, I mean, it's just bizarre stuff. Yes, sir. Yeah. Right. Yeah, when they built it originally. Yep. Yep. Yep, exactly. Yep, that's one very good theory that would have been there. Except it would have been under Solomon's temple, or because Herod's was expanded. It would have been just sitting there since, you know, 590, 586 or something. Yeah, and that's a very good idea, because there's all kinds of secret passageways and things there. Especially when you get down to Solomon's quarries, you kind of get a feel for it. No one knows. No one knows for sure. But it's a possibility. I used to just teach it got taken to Babylon and melted down. It's gone. You know, that's a possibility. Yes, sir? Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. They would bring it in, I guess. Yeah, they'd bring it in from somewhere. But it's not like Iowa. You don't go out and dig up a field and bring it in. Yes, ma'am. Well, I don't know. I know they're up on top destroying it up on top. Right, that's one reason why we really don't want Jerusalem going back into the hands of the Muslims, you know, some kind of, as an archaeologist, as a Bible student, because all these things are going to be, they're going to simply disappear, you know. I would think, I'm being accusing. They just need sacrifice. They, from the days of the Babylonian captivity, they've never had it. So Zerubbabel, Nehemiah, Ezra, Jesus' time, they never had an Ark of the Covenant for all that time. What they need is, well, really they just need to be in the right location with the right altar and then the blood of the red heifer, or the ashes of a red heifer to cleanse it to begin. And they've got the red heifer. They've got, we've seen the altar they've got. They just need to get in position, cleanse it, and offer sacrifice, and they're good to go. Which, in my understanding, would initiate that last 7 years. You wouldn't need the Ark of the Covenant. You don't even need the temple building built to offer that sacrifice. So if depending on your eschatology, that last 7 years could begin, I mean, as quickly as a peace treaty, and they take a forklift, set the altar in place, cleanse it with the ashes of the red heifer, and boom, within an hour and a half, they're into the last 7 years. But of course, that temple is going to be built. They would begin instantly building that temple, but that's not what they wouldn't be waiting for. They'd be going without it. Mm-hmm. No. Right. Because the curtain tore, and you remember where Zechariah was standing, right? What? Right. He was standing here. Here's your temple. Here's the holy place. There's a curtain here, and they're waiting for it, but there's no ark. He was here by this altar of incense, and this is where he was standing. He'd go in, and they'd go daily in here and minister at the table of showbread, minister at the lampstand, and burn the incense here. But they'd only go back here once a year in the most holy place. So he was standing right here, and it was his turn to go in here to the holy place, offer incense, but he didn't go back there. I guess what they said they did, and I'm off the top of my memory now, that stone where the Ark of the Covenant would have sat, and they think, again, there's different discussions on it, and I think, because I'm going to side with Lean Rittmeyer, is that is where the Dome of the Rock is at right now. In fact, there's a square the size of the Ark of the Covenant kind of chiseled out. I mean, you can see the shadow. You used to be able to go back in there and see it. I mean, even in our lifetime, we could have gone back there and took photographs in the Dome, the Dome of the Rock. Except an Orthodox Jew strapped himself with dynamite, went back in there and tried to blow the place up, and they shut it down. And I'm not sure. When was that? Okay. It was, if we just would have got a little bit quicker, we could have got in there and got some photographs. But anyway, you can see they have photographs, of course, and they think they can see the indention where the Ark of the Covenant sat. That is one theory. Lean Rittmeyer and some others hold to that for other reasons, too. But there are like a couple other locations where they think the temple would sit. And some hold, like if you read the Left Behind series, which I didn't, but my wife did, they discover something that's not in my book, but in other writings, they have found out that possibly the temple sat a little bit to the north of the Dome of the Rock, in which case they could go up there right now today, not upset the Muslims. All that would be a peace treaty. The Muslims can operate here in the Dome of the Rock, and right over here the Jews set up a little altar, and they're offering sacrifices. That seems to make more sense because it's kind of hard to imagine anybody bulldozing down the Dome of the Rock. And you wouldn't want to. I mean, it's a great monument. I mean, it's a great, archaeological, it's beautiful. I mean, it's Muslim, but it's still a great work. I would not want to see it destroyed just for archaeological reasons. But I guess, so it could be by each other. That's Tim LaHaye's and other people's idea. I like to think that it's going to be right back where the Dome of the Rock is. I don't know how it's going to happen, but it seems to me that's the original place. But that's a huge discussion from, it's way out of my area of expertise, but it doesn't prevent me from making comments. Okay. I want to get through this Western tunnel here, if you don't mind. Turn to page 123, since we've been talking about it all night. I do want to do this, and then we will quit. My goodness. Are you guys, I'm always surprised that you even come back, because it's like, we never go anywhere. It's like, where are we? If I was being evaluated on my teaching, following my lesson plans, I would be like being called in the office as, you are not on your lesson plan. So, okay, anyway, here we go, the Western Wall Tunnel. If you don't mind, I wanted to, because we're talking about this all night, here we go, the Temple Mount of Herod. The Western Wall Tunnel, right here is the Western Wall that you can stand here in the plaza, look at it. Down in this area right here, it's exposed in the sunlight. You can still see the sidewalk. It's been excavated. You can see the sidewalk. And I wanted to show you the picture tonight, and you may have seen it in some of the other books, of the rubble that is still here. The stones from the temple are still piled up where they pushed it off. You can still see the crushed sidewalk where the stones fell and crushed into the gutter down in here when the Romans destroyed it. But what we're talking about now is this area here that is underground. It's covered up. And they have tunneled right along here. In fact, you can go there. It's called the Western Wall Tunnels. It was easy for me to do. I went online, or if I called, I'm not sure how I did it, but after I booked a hotel in the old city of Jerusalem, I went online or called and bought two tickets, for Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock, paid for them with my debit card, went over there, and I printed them off online, went over there on the Western Wall Plaza, got in line, here's my tickets, and I walked in. I mean, it's that easy. I mean, I just bought tickets right here, and you went just like you bought tickets to a show downtown. So anyway, it's available. Anyway, if you look at this right here on that diagram, see if we can get ourselves orientated here. You've got the Western Wall Plaza. You can see it way towards the bottom of the diagram there. That's the Western Wall Plaza. And now we are going to walk all the way up to the northern part. And what he was talking about here, about where you hit the bedrock, you're going to eventually, because of Mount Moriah is going like this, okay, as you're going. So at first you've got all those layers of stone, but each time you go further up there, you're climbing Mount Moriah, and pretty soon you're going to be hitting, the bedrock is going to be hitting the stones at some point. And what they did to make sure it looked good, they just say, well, that's the bedrock. They would just say, start carving. And they just carve the image of stone all the way in the bedrock. So when you walk by, you didn't say, well, look at that stone wall. It would look like part of the wall of Herod's temple. And so we're going to be able to see that. And again, you can see certain things. I'll just point them out there. The Western Wall Tunnel dug in 1967, 1982. Again, that when it got done, they came out the other end. There was like a group of like 8 or 19 people got killed because they came up in the Muslim territory and they thought they came out of some tunnels, and there was a big riot. Right there it says bedrock in line with wall begins. So right there where you got that point, that's where that bedrock starts to be carved into Herodian-looking stones, the Herodian ashlars. There's a Hasmonean cistern right there that you'll see where the Hasmoneans had water supply. And Hasmonean aqueduct, where they had water, would actually run down into the city. Certain runoff water would run into the city there. And then you've got some pools up there that used to be a moat that surrounded the temple. Okay, the picture on the bottom page right is just that we're heading towards the tunnels. If you want to understand what's happening there, is I'm walking towards the Western Wall. I'm in kind of like a little arch. They're called Wilson's Arch in that area. And right in front of me is the Western Wall. Okay, turn the page. Now, that very first page there, the first picture on page 124, is the largest ashlar in the wall. It's called the Master Corstone. Now, see if you can understand this. Now, again, I appreciate you listening. When you would build so many layers of stone, and you'd be building these stones, let's see if I can do this right here. You get all these stones right here, and they're built on top of each other, another layer of stone right here. And there's just, you know, think of building something, it's going to go, whoa, they're all kind of wobbly, you know. Potentially. It's stone, but let's just pretend it's kind of wobbly. What they would do is they'd carve one big master core stone right here, a huge stone, and set that thing right on top of those. And all these stones are all fit together. They're still large stones, but there could be a little bit of a wobble to it. So they bring in this massive stone, set it on there, and it just takes all those wobbling stones, and they're done. They don't move. And so that master core, that's why that stone is so, you see, I'm touching it, and I'm not in trouble, okay? On the top right there, on page 124, you can see the smaller stones underneath there. That master core stone is, again, set there to hold it in place. On that picture on the top left, you can see I'm trying to take a picture. I couldn't even get the whole thing. I couldn't even get back far enough in the tunnels to capture the entire stone. That's why I take several different photos of it. But what I want you to notice is what's wrong with the stone. Not those little, you know what those little holes in it are from, right? The holes are from when they use this as a cistern. And they put like little stones in there and plaster it. That's been pulled off, okay, so you can see it. But what's on top? See on top of that right there? It's all chiseled away. And they've got little stones filling it in. Because that is that the Romans knew that if they could get rid of this master stone, if they could just chip that away, couldn't push it, but if they could chip it away, they could knock over the rest of this wall. But they were instructed, apparently, to knock down the entire temple precinct, including the walls. But they got this stone right here, and they couldn't move it. They could not move it, so they started chipping away at it. So you can see today, it's very low on this side. It's at least halfway down, I think, like this, and kind of comes up like this. And right there, it's like, they says, never mind. And the rest of the wall, it was never got moved. The rest of the wall, it locked the whole wall. The Romans could not move it, and that's, you can see right there. Does that make sense? You can see another picture of the cistern right there, some more details. Now we're walking through the Western Wall tunnels. I do have video of this. You can walk through there. I've got some video of it. You can go online and see that. You walk all the way through. Right there on page 126, that is a group of ladies right there. It's just a few feet from Warren's Gate. That's another spot there. That is directly where they think the Holy of Holies is. That is directly, if you draw this right here. Okay, stay with me. Okay, oh, my goodness. Okay, I'm going to quit. I'll say this. I'll quit. I promise. Okay, here's the temple. Here's the Western Wall. This is the here's where the Ark of the Covenant would have sat. This is the closest you can come to the Ark of the Covenant, unless you're in the Western Wall tunnels. Then right here, you are directly across from it, and that's what those ladies are. They're there praying. There's only four of them there praying, and they're that close to the holy place. The average person right here, well, I'm as close as I can get, but if you go down the Western Wall tunnels, you've got a straight shot. It's a matter of measurement. Yes. No, it's not. No, it's not. What you're talking about is right here. The Western Wall, right. I know you're talking about the... The Western Wall Tunnel?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about. What I thought you're talking about is right here. Yeah, the Western Wall out in the light, there's a little partition here. The women pray here, and this is the men's area here. You'll never see women over here. There'll be women here. Now you'll see guys and women talking back and forth between there, and you can lift up your camera and take a picture. I tried that. If you look right here on the bottom of, I took this picture. We're walking right by it right there, so I don't know what you're talking about. On the bottom of page 126, this photo was taken from the tunnel along the Western Wall looking down, and now you're looking straight down the wall. I'm standing right against the wall looking straight down. This is one of those shafts that they're talking about that goes all the way down to the bottom. And here's another one on the top of page 127. There I'm, again, looking through plexiglass, looking down to some of the stones that have been excavated. So, that, again, you can see a lot more. There's stone there. Okay, on bottom of page 127, we're right here. We're now on the actual pavement, the Herodian pavement. We're standing on the Herodian sidewalk. That was out in the open. In fact, you see those two columns? You can see Tony standing there. And you see those two columns right there? That used to be a colonnade going west, coming right off here. You'd come up here on the pavement, turn, and go this way down a street. There's a colonnade. That was out in the sunlight, was shining right there. It's completely covered up. We're underground. That's a pavement. That's the same pavement you see here, that you see here, and you see down at the Pool of Siloam. Okay, I'm going to quit. I'm so sorry that I didn't quit earlier. There's more details there in the Pool of Siloam, or the Western Wall Tunnels. I'll quit. Okay, we got to Herod's time tonight. Thank you so much. I'll pray, and you are free to go, of course. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for the evidence that has remained to verify your work in history and the scriptures, and we do ask, Father, that we would continue to learn these things and be able to make application to them in our Bible understanding and in our lives. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Hey, thank you very much for being here.